97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
And I'm Ryan Recker filling in. Wow, what a great show we've had so far. I'm really enjoying this. I'll be back again tomorrow with you. Mike Elam, I think, is back on Friday. And I got to tell you that this is a very interesting guest and a very interesting time in American history. Joining us now is former Yuma Sector Border Patrol Chief Chris Clem. You've been working with RFK Jr., the Health and Human Services. You've been focusing on the Office of Refugee Resettlement. You just wrapped up your 100-day commitment to serve as a special advisor. Maybe I should ask you how that went. How have these last 100 days been?
Well, it's been great, and what a setup. But the show's been good so far, then you bring me on, man. So you raised the bar, I guess. I got to step it up. So, Ryan,
well, you're part of making it a very special show.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. Look, Ryan, good to be on this afternoon. I will tell you that, I was asked by the White House to come up for the first 100 days, which is critical of any new administration, and to focus on the Office of Refugee Resettlement. And for you and the audience, that's where all the unaccompanied children who cross the border illegally, where they get placed once they're taken into custody and processed by Border Patrol or the port officials or ICE. And as we know and we come to learn over the previous administration, there was close to 500,000 kids that came in. And through various reports, and the numbers kind of fluctuate, there was 300,000 that were unaccounted for and or missing. And so my job was to basically come in there with my legacy Border Patrol chief sledgehammer and bust up the practices and policies that were in place under the previous administration. In other words, fix the problem so it never happens again, and then work directly with the law enforcement agencies, because Health and Human Services Refugee Resettlement is not a law enforcement agency. So get the information to ICE, FBI, all the various DOJ and DHS components to go find the kids, find the fraudulent sponsors, go after the traffickers. And I can tell you that there was a soundbite back on Trump's 100th day by Secretary Kennedy, who told the president and everybody in the audience that we have ended the vector that was HHS for trafficking and child labor. And that was because of the efforts that my team and myself put forth in those first 100 days. I mean, it was just ridiculous stuff, right? And you know, the president runs on Make America Great, and Kennedy ran on and promotes Make America Healthy Again, along with the president. It starts with our agencies, too. The American people deserve agencies that are healthy and operating with the best focus in mind. And that's what we did, and that's what I did. And I think we left it in pretty good shape and good hands. So those that are back there now after we cleaned house are taking the reins, and we're doing great stuff.
Well, if you go back to the first term of Donald Trump, you had the AOCs of the world that went down to a parking lot and, you know, they took the press photos and they would submit these things onto social media. And then you had other commentators saying that we're keeping kids in cages and they're drinking toilet water and they'll take pictures and they'll be like, Here's Border Patrol agents. They're whipping people. They're riding horses and whipping people. So you had all these different people lying about the situation that was going on at the border. You get into a Joe Biden administration, you get to see real what goes on when you flood people at a border and the realities of what happens when there's a lot of unaccompanied minors and other people that you just don't know where they go. It was probably a grim reality of what flooding the borders actually looked like. So how did you try to get past some of the falsehoods that were spread for so many different years to try to get to some of the truths in order to try to implement positive changes?
Well, a couple things you brought up. The second part, starting in 2018 under Trump 45, I was the deputy chief of the El Paso sector. That's the famous place where AOC did her smoke and mirrors, crying at the empty cages, and then lied about, oh, they're drinking out of the toilet water. I was actually on a congressional delegation the day before, so I swapped it with our chief, and he took that one. Man, I made a mistake. I should have been there because I would have been able to correct that right away. Yeah, so there's all sorts of nonsense and gaslighting and virtue signaling. That just happens. We saw exactly what happened in September of 21 under Biden when he lied about the horse patrol incident, calling them, saying they're strapping and whipping these people, complete lie, debunked immediately, but yet they lied to deflect from terrible policies out of the White House. So all we did, and all I've ever done, is speak the truth and go to accomplish the mission. The goal has always been border security is national security. So secure our border, process people as quickly and effectively, give them consequences for their actions, and that never changes. Work with the investigative agencies to go after the bigger fish, but Border Patrol agents especially, you know, are going to do what is right. Unfortunately, Biden handcuffed us and wanted us to catch and release because they claimed that everybody was, you know, coming here for amnesty and asylum and nonsense like that. So when you get into Trump 47 and you're dealing with an agency that was basically, you know, full of there were good people, but they were misled and lied to. So we just had to present them with the facts. We had to show them the evidence of the horrors and the trafficking, and the 70% of the applications for sponsorship had fraud in them. We had to explain that to them, show them this is what you were part of. This is what you were, you know, you may have not been knowingly or willingly doing that, but this is what we're fixing. And that is how we were very transactional. But when they saw that every number and every piece of paper was a kid and not just a process, it became transformational. And that's why we put things in place. And that's why we start from the moment that a child is encountered at the border, ICE Investigations is starting the investigation, not waiting for weeks and months or even years to go follow up on a trafficking case. So we just, bottom line, presented the facts and never changed or deviated from our goal of fixing the problem and making sure that the agency was fixed and that the processes were fixed to protect kids and to protect the integrity of the immigration system, which includes children who have to go see immigration judges.
Yeah. And, you know, they say that, you know, the best offense could be a good defense. And part of it, I think, is securing the borders, because when you disincentivize this illegal trafficking, this industry of these adults taking these children and moving them across the border, it's just so horrific. I can't even, my heart can't even handle the realities of what happens so often. But when you stop the flow and you make it so that it's stopped, you can't do that anymore. I'm guessing when the money starts to dry up for these traffickers, then they're going to stop trying to traffic children, or at least it diminishes greatly. And maybe some of these kids, the ones that are being used in this fashion, or these women, you don't even have to say kids sometimes, even these women that are coming through, adult women, that will be a whole different benefit to trying to secure things. And, you know, the trafficking, the fraud, the assaults, things like that, what we've seen too is a major assault on some of these different officers, assaults on ICE agents that are there working across the country too. And that's got to be troubling for you too. Some of the byproduct of the hate that goes on in some of the discourse that we're seeing, where they use it as an opportunity to go and try to assault these officers of the law that are out there enforcing immigration.
Yeah, you know, two quick things. One, you're absolutely right. When you go from an average of 10,000 people illegally entering the United States in December of 2023, and we had placement months where we placed over 18,000 unaccompanied kids back in April, I think, of 22. I think that was I know my number's correct. I just got to make sure if it was 22 or 23. But now when you have less than 100 illegal entries a day and unaccompanied children are down to, you know, single digits, it makes the investigative work, it makes the course correction much easier when you don't have to deal with that flow. Regarding the assaults on law enforcement, look, we all agree that the right to peacefully assemble and protest. But what you're seeing now is the pure hatred and emotional and intellectual immaturity of the progressive wing of the Democratic Party that don't understand the basic stuff of they are enforcing the law. These are people that are not, you know, that did not comply, whether it was 20 years ago or 20 months ago or 20 hours ago. They broke the law by entering the country illegally. They're working illegally, and most of them are targeted because they have prior orders of removal or there are criminal records beyond their illegal entry. And the other difference is, yeah, you know what? This administration, this president is not asking law enforcement to turn a blind eye to law violators, where the Biden administration said, if they're not on your target list, you can excuse it, use your discretion. This administration said, no, if you go to look for target X and there's five other illegal aliens there, you take them into custody as well, because you know, that's, you know, I'm sorry, that they still violated the law. And what are you doing hanging out with a Trinidad-Aragua person or an MS-13 person if you're just such an innocent, hardworking individual that just wants a better life? Don't disagree that there's plenty of them like that out there, but they still violate the law by crossing the border illegally, and many of them are fraudulently getting benefits and taking advantage of our great nation. And that's just what this administration wants to do, is take care of – charity starts at home. Take care of our veterans. Take care of our own kids. Take care of our own communities. Take care of our own natural disaster victims, not people from all over the world every day when we have $35 trillion in debt.
So the pace that the administration's working on, pretty ambitious pace. I mean, we're seeing all kinds of things happening simultaneously, different issues being addressed. And when it comes to immigration and the speed that they're working, one, I didn't even know it was possible for government to work this fast. Government has historically worked slow in everything except for maybe this. So how do you think the way that we're pacing itself out, the way that we're working it out, how do you think this is going to work in the future? What would you like to see happen? Because ultimately, I think the idea is we don't want to have ICE agents constantly going into communities and constantly working at this type of pace. I think once they settle things down, the border gets settled down, we might actually get more immigration laws enforced the way that they're designed to be enforced, so we don't have to be like this all the time.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. I will tell you two points on that. One, I was behind the scenes for 100 days. I was on the phone 6 days, sometimes 7 days a week with National Security Council, Homeland Security Council, all the heavy hitters, to include sometimes Secretary Noem, Secretary Rubio, but always with Stephen Miller, Tom Homan, that whole group, right? Specifically me as the rep for Health and Human Services. We are lucky to have a team of patriots working as hard as they are on the national defense, national security, homeland security part of this country. And it's because that was the direction of the president, and that's why things move so fast. Just like we didn't need a big, you know, a new immigration bill, we needed somebody in charge of the White House that's willing to do it. So that's why things are moving quick. But I agree with you. While I don't have the playbook in front of me, I believe that this quick, swift, strategic action that the president has taken on cleaning up, number one, securing the border. It's the safest it's been and most secure that since I've been associated with for 30 years. The interior enforcement, the actions we're seeing going on right now, as well as the children that are being rescued and identified and things like that. I think it's happening so quickly, because the next step needs to happen, right? We need to find some common sense immigration reform, especially when it comes down to unskilled and skilled labor, right? The farms, the nursery care, the hotel and restaurant work, right? We know where that exists, right? We've got to find a better way. But criminals should not be allowed to run free because they're working at a hotel or working at a restaurant. So I think doing this, It's like you got a hole in the boat. You got to bail the water out, but you also have to fix the hole first, or you're just going to keep on bailing out water. This administration is fixing the leak, which was our poorest border, and then we're going to start bailing out the water right now. And now hopefully we'll have some common sense from the left and the right to come up with some common sense practices. We don't need a comprehensive immigration reform that addresses everything. We need to address the things that are most important to American businesses and American workers, that makes America great, that makes us healthy, that makes us that shining beacon light of hope for people around the world, so we don't have fraudulent asylum, but proper asylum for those that are persecuted, that we don't have illegal scams going on for guest workers, but the right way for somebody to know how to get in the line. That's the key, right? Clear, transparent, common sense, you know, simple things. We don't need to get into, you know, performer visas for people that are in music. We need to talk about who's going to pick the apples, who's going to work there, and how do we work with those employers so we can hold them accountable, but also help them be profitable. I think it's a hard task, and it's complex, but complexity is good as long as we execute. The problem is those a lot of those yahoos in Congress never execute. They just talk and try to get sound bites on X and social media. We need execution through this complex environment.
You know, I think one of the problems is, one, we didn't have a plan, or two, we didn't have a leader, a commander in chief that was absent over the past 4 years, made things very complicated to enforce immigration law. So, Chris Klein, what happens to you next? What are you on, and what are you going to be doing?
Well, you know, I tell you what, I've got a lot of different things. I'm working on some various consulting projects regarding national security and border security issues that come up. I do believe in innovation and technology. I'm taking lead on an advanced AI system that will help us identify threats before they come to fruition. So I'm pretty excited about that. It's a new venture for me, so I'm excited. I will continue some of my speaker roles that I do with groups like Americans for Prosperity and others that really are trying to find some common sense solutions. I'm willing to do that because it's talking about border security and its solutions. And then the wild card of it all is, you know, so much of my TV time on some of the major networks has got the attention of a few directors. And I actually just filmed a short movie boxing event where I was the commentator because they thought my hair and voice was good. So who knows, right? We'll see what happens. But my heart is about keeping America safe. And so if something can lead me to make America and Americans safer, I'm gonna take a look at it and see where I can put some energy behind it. But always a pleasure to be on platforms like yours that give me an opportunity to speak the truth in what's going on. I'm very engaged with my former colleagues, both in Washington and right here in my home state of Arizona and along the Southwest border. So it's a good opportunity to continue to talk the facts to the people.
Wow. Chris Klemm, former Yuma Sector Border Patrol Chief, just worked with RFK Jr. at the Health and Human Services, looking at refugee resettlement, using his expertise at the border. Now, boxing commentator in the big time movies. Chris Klemm, thank you so much for joining us here. And wanted to look you up online. I don't know if you do social media, any place where people can find you.
Definitely can find me on X. It's a C Klemm official. I'm hit or miss. I get really active, and then I've got other things going on. That's a good one to find me. I try to stay relevant and opine on some of the people's comments and certainly try to engage as often as I can. Usually get a lot of engagement from me, then I end up go silent for a couple of days because I got other things going on. But look me up there, or you feel free to go to my website, chrisklemmofficial.com. There's usually a lot of my media and some of the things I've done in the past, some of the podcasts and whatnot are up there. Yeah. And we try to keep that updated at least weekly with the latest and greatest things I've been involved in. If you suffer from insomnia, click on one of those podcasts and I'll put you to sleep.
Chris Klemm, a pleasure. Nice to talk to you here this afternoon. We really appreciate
it. Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate the opportunity. Have a great day.
And I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Don't go anywhere. 97.1 FM Talk. I got to tell you, the Chris Klemm interview is very fascinating. He's someone that worked at high levels of the government, giving his recommendations, his thoughts. He's basically the Elon Musk of the border, except less controversial because I think everyone's on board with securing the border, and his recommendations sound like he gave some rock solid ideas of what they could be doing there. Let's see how they're implemented and hope it works. I know that we're going to talk to Christian Toto coming up after the break, less than 10 minutes from now. And he is the host of a Hollywood podcast, Hollywood and Toto podcast. And we're going to talk the Superman movie. The whole world loves it. I did not love it. I don't even know if I liked it. I was so lit down by the Superman movie. So looking forward to that. So Anthony Bernal is the former chief of staff to Jill Biden. He was making some news because he was pleading the fifth, much like what we saw Joe Biden's doctor. Can we play clip number 10 when he was asked about this from Fox News?
Hey, Ms. Bernal, you get a reaction to this morning? Did you plead the fifth?
About to find out.
How do you feel about this investigation? Do you have any thoughts? Ms. Bernal, last question. Could I just get a reaction to the New York Times interview Joe Biden gave?
Oh, boy. Well, as you can tell, he was not really looking to talk, much like his testimony. I think we have reaction from President Donald Trump.
He's a knucklehead.
I just wanted Ethan to use that clip one more time. That actually, that clip was used with Jerome Powell, but still, I think that clip could be used at any given point.
He's a knucklehead.
You can use the clip on me. I love the term knucklehead. That is a classic dad term.
It's even better in just the Trump voice. That's it. It's just so much better in the Trump voice.
I know. I know we really don't have time for the montage, but I'll just give you a heads up. Question, no answer. Question, plead the fifth. Question, plead the fifth. Question, plead the fifth. That is basically how Anthony Bernal handled the questioning today during deposition on the House Oversight Committee over allegations of a cover-up related to the mental health of Joe Biden. I don't think there's any question. He was not at the top of his game. He was not even at a halfway point of his game. He was definitely down the hill and compromised. I think a lot of people recognize this, and they realize that for the sake of what they thought was their country, was going to continue to weekend at Bernie, Joe Biden, and allow him to be used as the puppet for their own willing, their own bidding. And that is not good. In fact, it could be possibly quite illegal of the way that they operated. So I can see pleading the fifth is not to spare the embarrassment from the former president. It's to probably give them a little bit of comfort thinking they might be legally in the clear, but absolutely they are not, based on what the House Oversight Committee is finding and the president of the United States, Donald Trump, not letting this go, rightfully so. All right, when we come back after the break, I want to talk to Christian Toto. He is the host of the Hollywood and Toto podcast. We're going to talk the Superman podcast, the Superman movie. I was not a fan. I'll see what he thinks coming up. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk. I'm so glad that Fred, our producer, booked this interview. He's the host of the Hollywood and Toto podcast, Christian Toto. Thank you so much for coming on today. We appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.
All right. I saw the Superman movie Saturday. I wanted to see it really bad. I thought to myself, I've been waiting for so long. This movie better be good. It better not let me down. I get there with my wife. I got my popcorn. I got my drinks. I got the candy I snuck in. And I'm sitting there watching it. And several times I looked over to my wife and I said, this is just, it's not as good as I thought it was going to be. I was let down by this movie. So I wanted to get your thoughts on the Superman movie. What did you think?
I was let down as well. Listen, there's a high bar here. Both the character is iconic. The original Christopher Reeve movie was darn near perfect and is still darn near perfect. You watch it again, it holds up beautifully. And I was thinking, this is the movie that they're hanging the entire DC Comics franchise on, the reboot. They're going to bring out their A-game. And I think the casting choices were rock solid. I have no problem there. It's certainly a sillier, more kid-friendly story. I guess that's an option, a choice. It's not as dark and brooding as what we've seen in recent years. But the story's a mess. It's, you know, it's the kind of movie you watch. It's moderately entertaining because there's a lot of stuff happening on screen. And then you go home and you think about it, go, that was dumb, and that didn't make sense, and that's silly, and that plot hole is a mile wide, and that really could have been much better. Or, I mean, it just disintegrates with just a mild examination. But while you're watching the movie, it's just not very good. It doesn't have momentum. And even the things that do work, Lois and Clark, they have a nice little chemistry going. The film really abandons it. It kind of touches on it and then moves on. And, you know, the Lex Luthor, don't even get me started on the dog. And I'm a dog person, but having a CGI dog being so critical to the story, you do that in Superman 8 when you're completely run out of ideas. I know it's canon. I know, you know, Krypton the dog exists. I get that. But just come on. That's just and there's, you know, this canon breaking stuff, and I don't get too geeky into that. It doesn't work for me. But it's just a lackluster story. The script didn't have the whimsy I wanted. I could go on and on.
Yeah. And I got to say, let me mention this. People listening, I'm going to try my best not to spoil anything because I want to make sure that people have a chance to see it if they want to see it. So if I spoil anything, I apologize ahead of time. But here I was watching this, and I have a few thoughts that really went through my mind. One, they spent too much time trying to give us a backstory of two fictional countries that don't exist that are fighting. I thought you could have summed this up in two sentences as opposed to spending 10 minutes throughout the course of a 2-hour movie trying to give us the ins and outs of two fictional countries that don't exist, that don't like each other. One, two.
Yeah,
Iggy Pop at the end. They have the Iggy Pop song at the end. That was pretty cool. So, you know, I'm a rock star or whatever, or punk star or whatever the song. But I like that. I like the dog. I thought the dog was a nice little addition. But here's the part that I really didn't like about it. You have Superman in this movie. I don't know how old he is. Late 20s, maybe. So he is working in Metropolis. He's got the job at the newspaper. He's a full-grown adult. And he acts like a teenage child that mentally speaking. Like he has the maturity of a teenager and is going through these mental struggles like a teenager would, but he's a full-grown adult that should have a little bit more maturity because he's Superman. And throughout the whole course of the movie, I keep thinking to myself, he is such a wimp. Like, he's a punching bag that's so ineffective, and everyone else around him's the hero. And here he is like an emo goth kid in the 90s, just like, oh, everything's so weird around me, and I don't know what to do, and I don't know what to think. But he's Superman, so I was so thrown off and disappointed by that.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. I completely agree. There's even more things we could dig into. It's, you know, listen, at the end of the day, it's a comic book movie, and we are adults, and maybe we're missing something. But you know what? There have been some really great comic book movies that have been delightful for kids and great for adults. Like Gofan Iron Man, The Guardians of the Galaxy. I thought the first one was just wonderful. We can go on and on about these movies when they are good and successful and smart and interesting. And they're still fun for the whole family, and they're still engaging, and they still have silly people, you know, dressing up in tights, you know, shooting laser beams from their eyes. It's still a kind of a kiddie concept, but they've done it really well. They've built an entire, you know, I mean, movies are basically kept alive by the superhero franchises. And then you watch this, and it just collapses on any sort of cursory glance. And yeah, I mean, this is not a compelling story. And, you know, it's funny, I kind of lost track that they use the classic John Williams score. But you need that when there's some sort of heroic lump in your throat moment, when the hero is saving the day, when something amazing is happening on screen. And I thought, I didn't see anything amazing happening on that screen, so I don't even know why they bother queuing up that music. It's just, yeah. And having said all this, there are a lot of people I respect, who disagree aggressively with both you and I. And, you know, good for them. They enjoyed the movie. I didn't. That's where art is subjective. But I almost think this will be a little bit like The Phantom Menace, where people who say they loved it today, maybe in 10 years, look back and say, yeah, that's really very good. I just wanted to like it so badly.
I know. I wanted it too so bad. Christian Toto, host of the Hollywood in Toto podcast. Something else, too, about Superman in this movie. I came off of watching Superman and Lois on the CW network, and I really enjoyed that series. You had a Superman character there that I thought was fantastic. And the thing I really liked about it in the television series that was just right before this movie came out, it wrapped up on the CW, is that it explored the aspect of him being a dad. He had two teenage boys and he was married. And I so related to that side of it. And then when I saw this movie and after, I'm trying to think back at it, I'm like, maybe I just don't relate to a teenager that has all these mental conflicts and the internal conflicts going on that the rest of the world can't see. And I thought, why are they making a movie where I can't relate to Superman? And the Lex Luthor side of it, maybe we got to talk about that too. I'll tell you, I didn't like... He was so one-dimensional, which is a lot of these modern superhero movies, you can at least understand the side the bad guy's coming from. Like they'll bring up an argument and they'll say, you know, I kind of see where he's coming from there. He's wrong, but I can see where he's coming from. There was not a moment that you even sympathized or saw where Lex Luthor was coming from. It was driven by pure hatred. And I thought that was just so lazy. It could have been so much better.
I agree. You know, listen, even Thanos, which, I mean, is a spectacular screen villain.
Yes.
He wanted to save resources and thought that humanity couldn't really exist in its current form, and that if he wiped out half the world or half the universe, that people could live in a better place. I mean, as twisted and warped as that is, there was some sort of odd logic to it. But Nicholas Holt is a good actor. I think he did the best he possibly could. But again, this is not a well-written movie. It's just not. And that, you know, another thing, there was a sports reporter in New York who just blasted it in this monologue that went viral. And also, the movie really kind of sends Superman into a prison-like situation for a long time on screen. It's a minor spoiler, but, you know. And I'm thinking, you know, you just basically kind of put Superman on a shelf. And even I want to go back to Lois and Clark, because they have a moment together. They've got a bond. I think there's some chemistry there. And then that part of the movie is jettisoned in a way. And, you know, when you watch the original Superman with Christopher Reeve, that was the heart and soul of that entire film. And, of course, he spins the globe around to change time because he's trying to save his love. I mean, it's a beautiful, crazy, super heroic effort. And there's nothing like that here. It's just not.
Yep. Yeah. Some of this else that we find during this movie is that when so many people love a movie and you feel the opposite, how do you defend that? Because
yeah.
I don't want to bring politics into this, but before the movie, I apologize. I cut out there for a second. Sometimes the computer does that to me. Are you still there, Christian?
But yeah, I am. I didn't hear your question.
But basically, I find that when you have a $100 million marketing budget, that they have to put up some defense mechanisms in case there are some valid criticisms, and they set up this, you must be a hardcore crazy conservative if you don't like this, as a defense mechanism. And I thought that was lousy too.
It was lousy. It was unnecessary. Listen, they've spent like a year promoting this film, and it's been positive and upbeat and sentimental at times. And we can't wait for you to watch this movie, which is exactly what the marketing should be. And then literally at the 11th hour, director James Gunn makes it political, brings up immigration, and says, screw them to anyone who disagrees. I mean, it was stunning. And you could be a cynical and say, listen, he was trying to get the media on his side so that when stories come up about the movie, they would frame it in a very positive way, because that's how the media often reacts. So I just don't understand why he did that. It just seemed very short-sighted. But I guess that's Hollywood.
Yeah. All right. So if people wanted to read some of your reviews or listen to your podcast, things like that, people need to find you. Where can they go?
My website is HollywoodInToto.com. And you can find the Hollywood In Toto podcast on Rumble and YouTube and iTunes and most podcast providers.
Yep. Okay. You're probably used to this, having opinions on movies and things that may go against the grain. I found that when I was telling people I didn't like this movie, I couldn't find anyone else that actually disliked it like I did. Everyone else loved it. And I thought, maybe I'm the crazy one here.
that's the beauty of movies. And I love arguing about them and going back and forth. And I think if we're arguing from a good place, there's nothing wrong with that. We saw flaws, other people didn't. And, you know, this is an optimistic hero. It's lighter than the previous films. There are some good scenes. There are some good beats. So I don't deny that. That's just overall disappointing for me.
Yep. Yeah, I'll tell you, when my kid gets old enough, I'll show it to him. He's 10. He's, I think, a little bit young. But eventually, you know, he'll want to see this. I'll watch it with him. I might enjoy it seeing him enjoy it. But me as an adult that knows better, I didn't enjoy it. But there could be a different context where this might be better. All right, Christian Toto, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Toto is podcast, Christian Toto, Hollywood In Toto podcast. You can look it up, Hollywood In Toto. Just do a quick search and you'll be able to get to it right there. And okay, I am not the only one. I told so many people around the office, talking to them about this. Oh, I just didn't like it. And I was talking about some of the reasons, and I couldn't find anyone else that felt the same way I did. So I feel a little bit vindicated that I'm not alone in all of this. All right, we got the audio cut of the day coming up after the break. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk. And welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. I'll be back again tomorrow, if they'll have me, but it's always so much fun. Oh, we had such a big show. I tell you that Fred did a fantastic job booking. I don't know how we're going to top it tomorrow, but you're going to have to listen to find out. How about we do the audio cut of the day?
Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, Ethan, I think you can guess the audio cut of the day. If you had to guess which cut I'm going to pick, which one do you think it would be? you know.
He's a knucklehead.
That's it. That's all we need. Donald Trump calling Jerome Powell a knucklehead. That is so classic Donald Trump audio bite that you'll put on the soundboard and you'll be able to use that till the end of time. Ethan, I didn't even have to tell you the clip. You knew exactly what I was referring to.
He's a knucklehead.
Oh, that's so funny. You know, do we have time? Anthony Bernal was in front of the committee today, the House Oversight Committee. He was asked about the big scandal of Joe Biden in the auto pen. Maybe we just play a little bit of the montage that Fred
put
together.
It's not that long.
Okay, let's play that. Kind of get an idea of how it went today.
Did you ever advise President Joe Biden to pardon his son, Hunter Biden? On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer the question pursuant to my Fifth Amendment rights under the Constitution.
Was President Joe Biden fit to exercise the duties of the president?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer the question. I respectfully decline to answer the question. I respectfully decline to answer the question pursuant to my Fifth Amendment rights under the Constitution.
He was not being respectful. He wasn't respectfully declining. He was declining because he knows he's in trouble. James Comer had some comments on that. This is clip number five. He was asked his comments on pleading the Fifth over and over again on this.
Well, unfortunately, that was quick. This is the second witness that we've brought in via subpoena for a deposition that has pled the Fifth, and they've stated they're not going to answer questions. I want to read the first two questions. Just so everyone knows, these are the types of questions we ask. Was Joe Biden fit to exercise the duties of the president? He pled the Fifth. Second question, did any unelected official or family member execute the duties of the presidency? Now, this is Joe Biden's chief of staff. Simple question. He knew he was going to be asked that. Everybody in America wants to know that. He pled the Fifth.
Yep, Jill Biden side. It was bad. I mean, all things considered, I don't know what it would take to get a Joe Biden to testify, but I can tell you that if he is as sharp as all the Democrats said he was, and he was on top of his game and act younger than anyone they have ever seen, then it should be pretty easy for him to go in and clear all of this up himself. But you know that it's not physically possible for him to do that because he is not capable of doing that under his own will. He is not capable of clearing this up. I think that makes the scandal even worse when the person that you're discussing has no way to rebuke what you are bringing up against them. All right. Well, I had a lot of fun filling in today. I want to thank everyone. And if you want to find me online, Ryan Recker Radio is on Twitter. Ryan Recker Radio is on Facebook, rather, at Ryan Recker on Twitter. That's the way you can find me on there. I'll be back again tomorrow, and I think Mike Elam is going to be in on Friday. So we got a big week planned. We're going to see if we can top tomorrow from all the great guests we had today. Hopefully we'll see you then on 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.